A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Queen Pod. We are on a mission to bring you a companion piece to the entire Queen back catalogue, track by track, album by album. And incredibly, the band are very kindly letting us play all their music, which makes us the only podcast on earth with Queen playing all the way through it. However, we do need your support, so if you are in a position to do that, kindly pop over to patreon.com/QueenPod to find out how. Over to you, Fred. Welcome you, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to say hello. Hello! It's me, your host, Ro. Are you ready for some entertainment? Are you ready for a show? Well, she says bark, I say bite. She says shark, I say hey, comedian Suze Kempner. How do you do?
Oh, hello. Ding, ding, nice. Ding, ding. I'm a bicycle bell.
Hooray! And an honorary associate of the Royal Academy of Music very recently.
Yeah, not an honorary, just an associate, because I actually went there, so I'm not even an honorary.
But it sounds fancy.
It does sound fancy.
I don't know what it means.
Yeah, because like Lin-Manuel Miranda has been named an honorary associate.
Okay.
Because he didn't go there, but I'm better than him because I actually went there.
Yeah,
sure. We both Lin-Manuel and I have been named associates of the Royal Academy of Music in this year's honours list, and I like
That's
it better than the Queen's honours list because it's not all tied up in the Empire and that.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and I guess that means that you can just sort of march sheep through the Royal Academy of Music and stuff, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Lovely. Brilliant.
I own this place, etc.
Fantastic. Well, he's got stiffness in his bones. It's Queen filmmaker Simon Lupton.
Hello, Simon. I've missed those introductions, Ro. Thank you.
Really? Well, which of your bones are stiff?
Oh, all of them. Yes.
All of them.
Definitely.
All of them. Thank you, Susan.
All of the bones. Yeah.
Spotting my innuendo.
I've got mortgages. I've got loans. I've got it all.
Got hopes? No, they've all gone.
Please. Hopes are so 2019.
Yeah. And hello, it's not John Robbins. Sadly, we do not have John with us today. However, do not fret. Basically, now that Boris has said the pandemic's over, life's got busy. It's hard for us to schedule all of us to be together. So we're not always going to have all four of us together. We will have for many of the episodes, but not all of them. Fear not, John will be with us for loads of the upcoming episodes of this, finally, season three of Queen Pod. We're here, guys. We're finally making season three.
We're back.
So good. How are you guys feeling? Are you excited about season three, Suze?
Yeah, really excited. 2022. Sorry, I went forward 200 years.
You got the year. It's a good start, mate.
I went forward 200 years where this podcast will still be listened to by Queen fans around the world.
Exactly. Long may Queen live. Thank you very much. How about you, Simon?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's Queen launch into their sixth decade. We're here charting
it all.
It's a
crazy town, isn't it?
It sort of felt like the missing piece of the Queen jigsaw was
exactly.
A podcast, so
mm-hmm.
I'm happy that we're here,
and specifically season three of it. Let's say hello to producer Sam. Producer Sam, hello.
Hello.
Hello. We've got some fun stuff coming up this year, haven't we?
Yeah, we do.
What are we up to?
Oh, loads.
Come on then.
Looking at your notes, and you are the one who's meant to say all this.
All right, I'll say it. I'll say it. I just Just trying to let other people hear some other voices for once. But yeah, sure. Well, our ranking episode this season is going to be on the Queen B side. So that's studio tracks that don't appear on any albums. Tracks like A Human Body and tracks like that. That's going to be fun, isn't it?
I already know what some of my top picks will be.
Ooh. You can't include Stone Cold Crazy, though.
No, don't worry.
Okay, fine,
oh, don't worry about that, mate. I already know exactly what's going on.
I mean, I've got a good hunch of what's going to come top because it's one of my favourite Queen songs. But yes, I imagine that we're going to be getting a little crazy. No, let's not get ahead of ourselves. We're going to look at some of Roger's solo stuff for the first time. We're hoping that will be good. And we're very excited that Queen management have insanely kindly offered to let us put video clips from this podcast on the Queen YouTube channel. I am not going to believe it until I actually see it, but if that's true and you are seeing any of our stuff, then great. And given that we are starting a whole new season and you maybe are coming to us fresh with a season three, it probably behooves us to remind us exactly why we're all here, which is right at the start of the pandemic back in 2020, I sort of decided that I was going to go back through the Queen catalogue because I hadn't really been that heavily into Queen for ages. And I got you guys together much more knowledgeable about Queen than I am. And that's kind of what our mission is just to go through every single album track by track and have a wonderful time doing it. And so this season we will be looking at their 1978 album Jazz, their 1980 album The Game, and some other bits and bobs as well. We're also going to be trying something quite new this series. We generally end every season on a fan special, and this time we are planning to invite our patrons to attend the actual record on actual Zoom with us, and so they will see all the things that get cut out of the pod, which is mainly my gibberish. So that is exciting, and it's just the tip of the iceberg what we do for patrons. They get the pods early, they get them ad free. So go to patreon.com/queenpod. You can sign up for as little as £4 a month. We desperately need your support and to keep going, and we will do everything we can to make your experience as wonderful and precious as possible. We're about to look at Jazz, aren't we, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we are.
But before we do all of that jazz, let us have a little time for Queen of the Champions!
We are the champions! We are the champions!
Anyone got a Queen moment they want to share? Nobody? Nobody? Well, I've got a couple.
Go for it.
So we have a wonderful Facebook group, a Queen Pod fan Facebook group, which you must go along and join because it is lovely there. They're so nice, and I will pop in from time to time and even say hello. So, one of the members there, one of our dear listeners, Donnie Christian, he did something really quite interesting on the Queen Pod fan page, which was a series of polls in a sort of tournament style, pitching 70s Queen against 80s Queen. So the 70s Queen was Queen, the first album up to The Game, and then 80s onwards was Flash up to Cosmos Rocks. And then he would do a poll putting two post-80s albums against each other and then two 70s albums, ideally to get to our favourite 70s and post-80s album, and then he put them against each other. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Have I said that clearly? Right. Yeah. So, what is the favourite album to listen to, not which you think is musically the best? Which one are you more likely to put on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Donny started with this votey thing of 70s Queen versus post-80s Queen, just all of it. The vote of 70s won with 119 votes, with 80s onwards only getting 5 votes. I was one of those 5. Right, so the initial poll was heavily in favour of 70s. So then he found everyone's 70s albums and did these rounds of polls and then did the same with the 80s albums. And the winner of each era were then put up against each other in a grand final. So in the semi-finals, Innuendo beat out The Works, 79 votes to 44. Wow. So that was the favourite post-80s album. And then in the pre-80s albums, Queen 2 just scraped past Sheer Heart Attack by literally one vote to be the favourite 70s album. So the grand final, saw Queen 2 comfortably trounce Innuendo 118-41. Mm-hmm. Isn't that amazing?
Wow. Mm. That is right? Amazing. Yeah. That's fascinating. What a great thing to do.
Yeah, I thought it was a lovely thing. And that kind of stuff is going on that Facebook page all the time. You really must join in. If you're listening to this, you're probably old enough to still be on Facebook, so you might as well. Mm. All right, so now we got kids listening, guys. We should do a TikTok poll. Do they do TikTok polls, Sam?
I'm going to guess no. I don't.
Oh, you abstain from TikTok, even though you are.
I draw the line. Age.
Yeah. Producer Giles was saying to me the other day, Suze, that essentially these things happen, like TikTok happens, and all the kids get on it and they love it, and the kids are like, come here. And then a bunch of 40-year-olds find out about it and go, oh, hey, we've joined you guys. And all the kids are like, okay, we better find something. Like they get to own things for 2 years.
Someone tweeted yesterday, I can't remember who it was, they went, but they said, oh, it's cute how Facebook did to our parents what they decided video games were going to do to us.
absolutely. There is another tiny little Queen moment that I'd like to share, which is long-time listeners might remember right back in our episode zero, I told the story of how myself, Simon and took myself and a friend of mine, Paul Byrne, out to meet Brian May after an amazing Paul Rogers gig, and it was an amazing moment. It was a very funny story. It was the first time either of us had ever met Brian, and sadly, very recently, at the end of January, dear old Paul passed at only the age of 44, bless him. And he was very dear to us, and he loved the pod, and I just wanted to take a moment to say, rest in peace, buddy. We love you.
Yeah, Paul was always a ray of sunshine, which is an overused phrase, but not in this case.
Yes, yeah. He was an amazing fellow, wasn't he, Simon? Mm.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I do have very fond memories of that road trip up to Nottingham to see that. And, absolutely, as you say, there aren't enough words to describe what he was like. Mm. So he will be very, very, very much missed.
Only the good die young, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let us touch a base a little bit with a little bit of Queen news while we're here. Brian May and Andy and the Odd Sox have released a single because Brian appeared on a CBBC show, a brilliant CBBC show directed by Mr. Matt Holt. It's called Andy and the Band, right, Sam? And the reason I'm asking producer Sam about this is because you can tell me more about this than anybody. Because, Sam, you were the runner on that show, weren't you?
I was indeed.
And you've kept dead quiet about it all of last year. So what is this single? I've heard it, actually. It's amazing. And Brian's put so much Red Special all over it. But go on, tell us.
That is amazing. It's, the single's called Planet Rock. Basically, Brian plays an alien called Godfather Rock. He looks like Brian.
Yes.
who lives on Planet Rock. And he helps one of the members of the band find his missing air guitar. That's the episode.
Nice. It's beautiful.
And yeah, it's just an amazing track. It's really hard.
It's good, isn't it? It's really heavy.
It's really here at the end. Just goes really heavy for like 20
proper
seconds.
Proper metal.
He was so lovely. Obviously, I mean, every time anyone's talked about working with Brian, he was so lovely, and he was like, he stayed around longer than anyone after
that's nice.
It was an amazing experience. It's a really cool song. Very quickly, my favourite thing from about the song is that Matt, the director, when he was telling me, okay, yeah, we've got Brian Mo for an episode, but you got to keep it really hush hush. I was like, okay. And they sent Brian the song that he'd be involved with, and Brian sent back a longer version of the song that he added stuff to, which was amazing, and which meant they had to then take like 30 seconds out of the episode from the script to make room for the song in the running time.
Because you're not going to cut any Red Special,
because you can't cut that out. What are you going to do? Oh, thanks, Brian, but no.
Oh, beautiful. Right, that's enough of you, Sam, and your TV career. Let us please take some time to thank our dear Patreons. So basically, if you join Patreon, you get a badge, you get a lovely postcard from us, you also get a shout out from us on the pod. So it is on me today to give a very warm and gracious thanks to Ladan Manavi and Dr. Anne in St. Paul. Thank you, guys. And Suze, who would you like to thank?
Oh, I'd like to give a very big thanks to Bees Cam and Nicola Dean. Cheers!
Cheers, guys.
Cheers!
Simon, who have you got?
Well, I'd like to doff my cap to Terry yes. Horsfield and Hayley Robertson. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Legends
Thanks, guys.
That they are.
They are very active on the... They're all very active on the Facebook page as well. It's wonderful.
Fab.
Yes, indeed. But I think it's time to get to the works. We are finally here. We're going to listen to some Queen now. It's good stuff, isn't it? So, the 1978 album Jazz. Simon, do you want to give us a little potted history on the context of this release, this quite massive
yes.
album?
Yes, I will. And I've just picked up, actually, on what you said about there could be people listening to this for the first time joining
yes.
us.
Yes, yeah.
So, basically, what's about to happen is I'm about to sort of give a little context into what the band were up to, what was going on in their lives at the time that they came to do this album. I'd just like to say it's normally a lot more rock and roll than this. So don't take this one as being a fair representation
right, yeah.
of what, of the what world we normally talk loopy. About. Yes. 'Cause obviously I'm delighted to be back, you know, continuing our journey through the Queen story. Yeah. Talking about when our heroes got stuck into the Jazz album. And to do that, we have to salute a vital person in the Queen family and delve into the very sexy, glamorous rock and roll subject of income tax.
Mm.
I know, strap yourselves in, this is going to get raunchy. In our last episode, I explained how Queen had taken the bold and unusual step of managing themselves. If they were going to achieve their dreams and take Queen to the level they truly believed it could go, they needed financial control, security and independence. So after an amicable split with John Reed, they created Queen Productions Limited, a company which would handle all their business management. And for the day-to-day running of that, they had managed to persuade Jim Beach to give up his partnership at the London law firm he was at. But in another stroke of genius, the legend that is John Deacon restructured Queen's accountancy setup and brought in tax specialist Peter Chant. Now, I suspect most Queen fans won't have heard of Peter, but he is an absolute key part of the Queen story, and the band would be the first to admit his genius behind the scenes played a major role in the success of their business structure. Which brings us neatly to that topic of income tax. I know, I can tell by your faces.
This is so
really
sexy.
Excited.
So sexy, Simon.
Okay, so look, quickly, in 1978, the situation in the UK meant that any annual income over £23,000 would be taxed at 83%. Okay.
Whoa, okay.
And in addition to that, there was an investment income surcharge that could take that total to a staggering 98%. So for every pound you earned, 98 pence of it had to be paid in tax. It's too tedious to explain in detail, but clearly the first order of business for Jim and Peter was to get to grips with this. And it was Peter's idea that the band should take a year out. What this meant was if the band spent 360 days of the year out of the country, it would drastically reduce their tax liability. Now, this wasn't about dodging tax, I hasten to add. Income would still come into their UK-based company and be taxed accordingly. But given the band spent so much time out of the country anyway, touring and recording, their new setup enabled them to gain the benefits of doing so. So Peter Chant had turned out to be quite a find, and the organisation he and Jim had helped the band establish was proof that while they were creating brilliant, era-defining, timeless music, the backroom also needed to be in order to get the balance right between being commercially as well as creatively successful. And in that respect, Queen were just as smart and innovative as they were on stage. So this is why, between July and October 1978, the band found themselves first in Montreux at Mountain Studios, and then in Nice, France, in a studio brilliantly called Super Bear, recording the Jazz album. And without that, Freddie would probably never have watched the Tour de France swoop past, and we might never have had bicycle races. Peter stayed with the band from that point onwards, And even I had the privilege of dealing with him on a number of occasions. Perhaps unsurprisingly, he was one of the first people I got introduced to when I started working with the band. And he remained the first port of call for anything financial up until 3 years ago when he sadly passed away. What he contributed may well have seemed to be at the complete polar opposite to the outrageous, theatrical, extravagant end product that we as fans consumed and fell in love with, but it was no less important. Peter was fine with that, by the way. He never expected or sought recognition for his part in the Queen's story. However, for the band to be their mercurial, brilliant best, they knew they needed steady hands around them. And so that is why the moment in 1978, when they brought Peter into the fold, is actually probably one of the most crucial in Queen history. To finish off, I have a few fun facts about the Jazz album for you. Having not used a producer on their previous News of the World album, the band reunited with Roy Thomas Baker for this one. The album cover image was inspired by something Roger had seen painted on the Berlin Wall. And if you have it on vinyl, which Ro has here, if you open it up, you get a fantastic double-sized photo of the band and all their gear, which I believe is in the main casino at Montreux Mountain Studios, which was where they were recording. There are a couple of interesting credits. One is for a thunderbolt, courtesy of God, which features on Dead on Time. And the other, a nod to Halfords for supplying bicycles, which of course included a delightful... which of course features in the legendary video. Amusingly, the band included a delightful poster of these ladies in the album, but it caused a public outcry in the US where it was deemed pornographic and was banned. Instead, you had an application form you could send off and the poster would come to you through the post. In the UK, Jazz was released on the 10th of November and would go on to achieve platinum status. Bicycle Race and Fat Bottom Girls were released together as a single, followed by Don't Stop Me Now. Elsewhere, Jealousy and Mustafa were also released as singles, but in limited territories only. But how did it get on in the charts? Well, I'm hoping that Ro has the answer to that one.
Well, I do, because I make producer Sam do all my research. Hey. It's great. Yeah. By the way, Simon, very good. Very good.
Oh, thank you.
Very good. Not an easy history to make interesting. And you know, hopefully next time it will be better.
But we'll try.
No, you were fantastic. That was great. And actually, in fairness, the thing that I kept thinking about while you're telling us about that stuff is, like, this is 1978. So they've only been going like 5 years since Queen was released, right? So, I mean, I haven't achieved that much in 5 years in my life.
No, I know. But when you think how much they did achieve in, like you say, that period from releasing Queen to recording
it's
Jazz.
It's amazing.
It is incredible.
Yeah. So, to get to a point where they're fully independent financially, you know, that's what I loved about them. They're four rock and roll guys, were not fools, and could just, you know, the business aspect of it was as fundamental as the creative, and that was a perfect sync. I love them. I think they're amazing inspiration, really. Yeah, fantastic stuff. So, yes, so Jazz was released 10th of November 1978, and it peaked at number 2 in the UK album charts the week beginning of November the 26th, 1978. So would you like to hear what was in the top 5 that week?
Yes.
It's fun stuff, Suze. It's fun stuff. So at number 5, Give 'Em Enough Rope by The Clash. Great stuff.
Okay.
Number 4, Emotions by various artists.
What?
What? Yep.
What, just a compilation album called Emotions?
Called Emotions, yep, yep. A lot of feelings, I guess. Number 3, 20 Golden Greats by Neil Diamond. Number 2, Jazz by Queen. And at number 1, keeping them off the top spot, maybe the biggest phenomenon of that year. Guess what it would be, Suze?
ABBA?
Oh, no, mate. It's Grease, the original soundtrack from Grease.
Good album,
I'm just like singing to you. So good. I did play that to death, to be fair. But you can't.
When the Grease Megamix comes on at the disco, you know, it's good. It's
a good
night.
It's big times, yeah, absolutely. Where are you guys on this album? Suze, how do you feel about Jazz in the canon of Queen albums? Where does it sit for you?
Oh, I have very strong memories of listening to Jazz for the first time. I'd have been 16 and I remember buying it on CD in the morning at the Hour Price near my sixth form college.
Right.
And I spent all day looking at the booklet on the inside of the CD, like imagining how the songs would sound.
Oh, wow.
And like, I was remembering that, making my notes for this, and cool kids today, they won't know what that was like, what it's like to buy an album, hold it in your hands all day and go, oh, I wonder what these songs sound like, because now you can get everything instantly. I mean, that's neither a good nor bad thing, but it's kind of one of the last memories I have of something like this happening in any medium.
Right.
And it's 21 years ago. Yeah. But I love jazz. Yeah, but jazz was, and also at the, because I went to sixth form in Reigate and they had really good charity shops around there. And I bought jazz on vinyl there. I just had it so that I could, because I just found it there. And I was able to stick it on my wall, and the record was on my wall for years, just blue tacked to the wall. And it fell down and broke, and I did think, like, no, this is crazy. What a terrible, terrible calamity. But it was just a thing stuck on a wall. The only Queen album I've ever owned on vinyl, though.
Yeah, exactly. Over the pods we've done so far, I've noticed you referring to tracks on this album quite a bit.
Yeah, I like
jazz. An area that, I think you're in that area. I have to say, I think as a kid, I found this album incredibly patchy. When I was young, there were songs on this album that I actively disliked, which now, as an older, more mellow and possibly wiser, more open-minded human being, I don't find at all. I really enjoy the album. But it is sort of one of the albums where, when I think of it, I'm like, oh my God, there's stuff on there I love so much. And in my head, there's things that I maybe don't, until I'm actually listening to them. And I go, actually, I do quite like these things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's quite a long album, you know. It's 44 minutes and 40 seconds, right? So it's got a lot on it. It was the longest Queen album to that point, at the point of release. You know, like Innuendo is their longest album at 53 minutes, 48. So it's not far off from there, right? So I found that really interesting. But I don't know that I have an affinity with jazz in quite the same way. Like, even the singles from it aren't necessarily my favorite singles that they've released. Do you know what I mean? So but there are tracks on there like Dead on Time that I just love so much. How about you, Simon?
I find it a fascinating one, actually, and it's interesting when you were talking earlier on about that debate between 80s Queen and 70s Queen. And for me, sort of jazz is at the gateway.
It is the bridging album
of Queen transitioning from being 70s to 80s. I think if you look at Queen 1, Queen 2, Sheer Heart Attack, then you look at Night at the Opera and Day at the Races, and then you look at News of the World, you can see a very definite progression there. For me, jazz, they kind of seem to have lost any sense of real direction, in terms of didn't feel like with the jazz album they were trying something specific. But then out of it comes The Game, which then sort of propels us into the 80s, and we're off again.
Yes.
So I find it a fascinating album, because there's a lot on there that, unless you're a Queen fan, you'll have never have heard.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think, and we're going to talk about some of them, and I think they're lots of lovely little gems that when you're a Queen fan, you go, oh yeah, I like that one, you know.
And the thing I love about what you've just said is you hear that 70s sound from the band, but you're also starting to hear sounds that are starting to become more prominent from The Game onwards. It is literally it is a bridging album, very much. It's a fascinating album. Yeah. Fantastic. I've got some fun bits and bobs from this era that I thought I would share with you guys. You mentioned that Roy Thomas Baker came back to produce on this one, and in an interview in 1982, Roy sort of recalled the nightlife during the recording of the album. And he said, every night we'd go to this club on the corner that had the most amazing stripper. So we had to stop the session at 11 o'clock, go watch the stripper, and then go back to record again.
Lads, lads, lads.
Just, wow. you know, were the 70s good or bad? I can't tell anymore.
So it wasn't just all about the income tax then. Oh, that's good. Oh, that's good.
No, there were still strippers. I wonder if that might have been partly an inspiration for Let Me Entertain You. Who knows? And then there's this. There were a couple of wild stories of parties from that era, but the one that I really liked was... they'd had the band had a party in Montreux celebrating Roger's 29th birthday, and they reportedly, and not this, they're not known for really doing this. They weren't this kind of band, but apparently they did trash the hotel. Apparently Freddie was swinging on a cut glass chandelier and stuff.
Literally swinging from the chandelier.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Fair.
Which is good rock and roll stuff,
yeah.
And certainly puts the income tax issues into. into a fine light. Shall we get into the tracks then?
Yeah,
I think that would be a good thing to do. I think we should start with the first track on the album, of course, which is the mighty Mustafa.
And we're off.
Isn't that great? What an album. What a way to start an album. And the one thing I'd say about that is listening to that for the first time, I still remember putting that on for the first time.
Yeah, same.
Having
yeah.
such a potent effect. Yeah, go on, Suze.
Oh, totally. Yeah, you put that on and you go, what? Especially as a 16-year-old. Especially as I'd had the... you know, I'd had that booklet open all day. I was like, Ibrahim, what's all this? And you hear it, you go, oh, they went there. Yeah, it's really daring. I often wonder why this album isn't held up as being as experimental as albums like A Night at the Opera, because
sure.
That is, like you say, a very yeah. bold way to begin an album. They could have begun the album with Let Me Entertain You, and they went, no, we're going to go with Mustafa.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not Middle Eastern. I'm Indian. But, you know, at that age, I had no idea that there were any people of colour in the band at all. And this came out of nowhere. And I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, my God, this sounds like the kind of things that my parents keep forcing me to listen to. But it sounds so much better than the stuff that my parents, because it's Queen. And it was so cool. And I'd go, look, and run up to my parents, go, look, this is proper music. This is how you do it. And I was like, this is way better than your Indian classical music. I was really ridiculous about it. But that song had a massive impact on me. It was like the band saw me, recognised me as some little Indian guy in suburban London, you know. How about you, Simon?
Well, I think it absolutely sort of fits into what I was saying about it's one of those tracks that if you're a Queen fan, you know and you love. And if you're just familiar with the hits and you heard that, you would be thinking, what the hell is going on? But, you know, to us it makes perfect sense. And I remember the story that Gary Cherone from Extreme talks about is that when Extreme did the Freddie Mercury tribute concert and they did their little Queen medley in the first half of the concert.
Oh God, that was brilliant, yeah.
And at the last minute he decided he was gonna open it by just walking out to the front of the stage on his own and singing that refrain. And he was so nervous he turned his back on the audience because he was like convinced it was going to be met with stony silence by, you know, 90,000 people going, you what? But he did it, and he said, and after that first note, he just heard the audience just roar.
Yeah.
Because they all got it.
Track Queen fans adore, isn't it? You're right.
It is.
It's an amazing track, and it's sort of it is the reason for this pod. It's like we want like we were so happy that actual diehard Queen fans are digging our vibe and everything. It's wonderful to be celebrating this stuff, but also we're so interested in casual Queen fans exploring all this amazing music that isn't on Greatest Hits 1 or 2, that is just so, so good. If you are confused by the lyrics, Freddie essentially said it was nonsense, loosely based on bits of language without any real meaning, and there's sort of English in there and Arabic and Persian chucked in. But what I love about the tune is it's sort of like Bring Back That Leroy Brown, or is Freddie does this, like he'll take a genre or a type of music and he will do the perfect, like Crazy Little Thing Called Love is a perfect Elvis Presley rock and roll track, right? Mm. Like, Bring Back That Leroy Brown is that sort of perfect sort of, I don't know, what do you call that type of music? Sort of, not blues,
oh,
but
that Tin Pan Alley kind
exactly,
of.
Exactly, exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And these riffs, the way this music's created, it is that sort of, yeah, it sounds really Middle Eastern and it kind of hits all of those beats. And Brian's guitar on it is extraordinary, the sounds that he's making. He kind of, you can almost smell streets with snake charmers with odd shaped bassoons and things. You know what I mean? I know that's starting to, we're starting to veer into racism actually, but my point is it is brilliantly put together. Should we listen to a nice big chunk of it?
Mustafa Ibrahim, Mustafa Ibrahim.
Do you know what I mean? It's like he did, like, that's the only song I can readily think of where he tapped into that part of his history and his life. Like, he put it all into Mustafa, and then that's it. I've done that. I'm moving on to doing all these other different genres and stuff. He just, he was so eclectic. I don't know. What did you think of that stuff musically, guys? Where were you on that, Suze?
Oh, well, on that, because I talked about Mustafa, the opening, there's a clip of Freddie doing it live in, yeah, I think, 79. I talked about it on, was it an episode we did around Christmas 2020? I can't remember, but it was on like an end of series thing. I wrote down that. But I don't think I've talked about on this podcast before Freddie's use of straight tone and vibrato, and how he would use the two, you know, where he would choose to put straight tone and where he'd choose to put vibrato before on this podcast. So Mustafa's a really good example of that.
Sorry, is straight tone the opposite of vibrato?
Yeah, so okay. Vibrato is creating a ripple effect in the vocal folds that it creates that sound you will hear where the voice appears to be moving. So a straight tone would be his opening of this song where he's like, Ibrahim. That's all been straight tone. And then he really leans hard on the Allah sound. He's sort of keening on it almost. Allah, 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 Allah. And then there's vibrato on that. La, And when Freddie uses vibrato, he doesn't do it very often. And when he does, it's very fast vibrato. He hasn't got that very long, wide vibrato that you hear on someone like Judy Garland. He's got a more Streisand vibrato, which is neither better or worse. They're just two different things. It's just so apparent where he's chosen to put straight tone and vibrato in this opening phrase and throughout the song.
Well, the reason I picture, I'm so fascinated by what you said there is through that a la bit. He is so clearly evoking that sort of, you know, that voice that sings every morning.
Yeah, it sounds
at
like the call to prayer.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly. That's what I was looking for, that phrase, call to prayer. Exactly.
When I went to Marrakesh 3 years ago, and the first time I heard the call to prayer, I was like, hey, it sounds like Mustafa.
Yeah.
That was the first thing it made me think of. Because I'd never been anywhere where you hear it, where you're somewhere and you hear it. I was like, oh, hey, that's what that sounds like. So every time it happened, I'd be like, hey, cool.
And Simon, you're the most English person I know. What was it, like an assault on your ears or something? What was it like for you? Did it seem exotic or exciting or just a cool bit of music? Yeah, wicked, I'll have this.
Yeah, no, it did sound very exotic. Yeah, because like Sue's, it wasn't something that I'd heard in that respect. I mean, I was sort of aware of it, but yeah, it did sort of come out of the blue. I think for me, it sort of, I wonder if at this stage, when Freddie rocked up to the studio and said, hey guys, I got this idea, whether they kind of went, oh my God, what are we going to do now? What is this? Or whether they were just like, yeah, sure, fine. Sounds great.
It sounds like they're relishing it. I mean, you look at...
Yeah. Oh, they get into it, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Deakey's going, boing, boing, doing all the, you know, Roger's doing this incredible stuff. And Brian has, as always, gone, right, okay, we're going to do something from this point. Well, I must make sure it's as authentic. they give it their all. I think it's magic.
I know, but there's so many points through Queen's, you know, songs where they've done it, which you just wanted love to have been a fly on the wall when they talked about doing it.
Because so much.
I would be sitting there getting terribly anxious going, this isn't going to work. Everyone's going to laugh at us. They're going to think this is ridiculous. Yet they just do it, and they do it with such conviction and such authenticity that we listen to it, and it's just brilliant. But they must have had those moments of doubt, surely, or maybe not by then.
I think there is that. It's still right. There's an element of wit to it. There's that relationship. There's that little theatrical relationship that they always have with the audience, right? That's what they taught me is always keep the audience in the forefront of your mind. So when they're making this stuff, they're making it and putting it on an album but they're thinking about the people listening to it, and I think that drives them to such an extent that whatever they're making, they put their all into making it as entertaining as possible. That's wonderful stuff. All right, should we move on to Fat Bottom Girls?
Yeah.
Ooh. It's amazing. So, Fat Bottom Girls, now we did talk about this, of course, on our Greatest Hits mini pod, episode 4 of our Greatest Hits mini pods that we did last year. So, you can go back and have a look at that. It's a very cool episode. Suze makes a point about how progressive the song actually is. Do you need to reinforce that point at this stage? You said it predicted the future because actually...
Yeah, it's not so much progressive. It just saw the future that big asses would be in.
Yeah.
Because when I first discovered this stuff in the 90s, it was all about massive boobs. Pamela Anderson was it, you know.
Of course.
And now it's all about massive asses, and Queen knew that 45 years ago.
Saw Kim Kardashian from...
Yeah, they were like, in the future, everyone's going to want a massive ass. People are going to have fat sucked out of other parts of their bodies to put into their asses.
Do you think
it's
that's
the most dangerous operation, dangerous procedure you can possibly have? Yeah,
is
like 3% of people die from having it.
Oh my God.
It's not worth it just to have a big ass because that's in fashion at the moment. Just wear a tight waist, high-waisted trouser. It makes your ass look massive. Trust me.
Good tip. Thank you very much.
It was a bane of my life for a while, and now I'm like, hey, yeah.
Got the goods.
High waist, big arse.
Would big arses be in if this song didn't exist? That's my question.
No, it would. They wouldn't. It would still be about tits.
Oh, what a world we live in. Well, it's a great episode. Simon, you gave us a beautiful guitar-only version of the track and the live vocals clip of that. It's very worth you checking out. But it was released, Fat Bottom Girls, written by Brian May, was released as a double A-side single with Bicycle Race in October 78, and it peaked at number 11 in the UK singles chart. The week beginning November the 19th, 1978. I'm going to whiz through the top 10 because we didn't have time to do that on the mini pod. Okay. So I'm going to do that here. And you are going to see a bit of a theme emerging. So at number 10 is Sandy by John Travolta from the soundtrack of Grease.
Song about where he goes, he sexually assaults his girlfriend and then sings about how sad he is that she left.
Oh, really? Oh, God, I've never
picked
that
song.
Up on that.
That song in the film, he tries to.
Oh, God!
He tries to bodily force her in a car and she goes, "No way!" And then he sits outside his car going, "Oh, they're all going to laugh at me in school on Monday." It's like, mate, you're 35.
Oh, man. Wow.
What are you even doing at school?
I've never looked through Grease through that prism. I'm going to watch it again this weekend and see what a harrowing experience that film is. At number 9, Hanging on the Telephone by Blondie. Banger.
Oh, yeah.
At 8, Instant Replay by Dan Hartman.
What?
I don't know what that song is. I'm sure it's wonderful. At number 7, Summer Nights by John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John.
Hey.
At number 6, Darlin by Frankie Miller. At number 5, your favourite Sue's Pretty Little Angel Eyes by Shawaddy Waddy.
Hey. The gods.
At number 4, Do You Think I'm Sexy by Rod Stewart. So there's big time stuff. Big time stuff going on.
You heard his new song?
Classic.
I have heard his new song. He did it on Graham Norton or something, didn't he?
Yeah, it's awful. It's called One More Time. And he's like, just a man going, "Oh, come on, let's have sex again. Oh. Just for one last time." And you go, "Rod, just stop it. Like a wasp at a window. Buzz, buzz, buzz."
Oh, God. Well, he's got a lovely voice. Okay, so number 3, My Best Friend's Girl by The Cars, another huge classic. At number 2, Hopelessly Devoted to You by Olivia Newton-John.
She was cucked by Travolta.
And number 1, incredibly keeping Grease off the number 1 spot, was Rat Trap by the Boomtown Rats. So it's a pretty packed top 10. So I could see, you know. Yeah, I think Grease had something to do with what was going on at this time. But it's fantastic stuff. The other thing I love about this song is Fat Bottom Girls references Bicycle Race, where he shouts, "Get on your bikes and ride." And then the reference is reciprocated in Bicycle Race when he goes, "Fat Bottom Girls, they'll be riding today." I love that little symmetry. It's very, very cool. Should we listen to a bit of it?
Yeah.
Why not? Go on. It's a banger.
Now, the thing to say is, especially for casual Queen fans, the version that's on Greatest Hits and on the single and all that is a shorter version of the song. This is an extended version of the song that exists on this album, right? So it is very cool. So you get longer guitar sections on the album version, and there's a longer fade out at the end of the song. And I thought we would play a bit of that extended guitar so we could actually enjoy that. And
definitely.
The other thing to look out for me is John's bass kicking in. Come on, Sam, let's listen to some of this.
Take me home tonight, on down beside your
good stuff.
It's just a great track. Where are you on this one, Simon?
Oh, love it. It's, if you want a song, it's one of those songs that you can trot out if you need to say to someone, you've never heard Queen, just have a listen to that. That's what they're all about. You know?
That's what you're doing. The first thing you're going to play them is Fat Bottom Girls, a song.
It's not necessarily the first. It's one of the first.
Right, okay.
You know, great vocal. Fine. Thumping fine. Guitars.
I just feel
drumming,
you're on out
driving
of touch
bassline, harmonies, catchy tune, that's tongue-in-cheek true. Lyrics. What more do you want?
I don't want any more. That's everything I want in this song. Brian's guitars in this song are so good. So good. Yeah, yeah. How about you, Suze?
What I love about Fat Bottom Girls is it sounds like loose, hoedown American rock.
Right.
Like that they're just jamming. Yeah. But it's actually very strict and disciplined. They keep to a very, very strict tempo throughout. It's tight as hell, but it's got a very loose feel, and that's so hard to achieve.
Yeah, yeah. It's what I've always said about that song, is every time I listen to it, I can hear the guitars doing, hear a new strain in there, things I haven't heard. It's unbelievable. I've got a lovely couple of little bits of bobs on this track, which is... given that John's not here, it would behoove me to make sure that he's well represented. John, I'm sure, would bring this up. It was one of the few Queen songs played in an alternative drop D guitar tuning, which I don't know what that means, but John would. So it's tuned down in a specific way, which is very rare for Brian to do, I think, on a track. So I wonder what
I
he does live.
I sort of understand what that is, I don't play guitar, but
yeah,
I sort of
and
go,
it's
okay.
It's why when you see them live, he swaps guitars for that.
I was going to ask that: does he play a different guitar? Is it set?
He plays
it
a different guitar for that one because it's already tuned down. Because it would just take up time to sort of tune the red special down and then play it and tune it back up again. Yeah.
Well, next time you guys are watching Montreal, keep an eye out for that. Apparently, Brian wrote the song with this is his words, with Fred in mind, as you do when you have a great singer that liked fat bottom girls or boys.
Freddie just is like, I'm here for big asses.
Yeah,
so get on your bikes and ride.
You can get away with it when Freddie's your front man. He just...
That's it.
He makes it fun. There's nothing pernicious about it. It's great. And then Michael McKean confirmed that the song was... that it is this song that was the big influence on This Is Spinal Tap's track.
Big bottom. Yeah. Talk about my flaps, my girl's got them. Awesome.
Which they sang at the tribute. It was phenomenal. So good. So, so good. All right, let's come back to the tracks in a moment. But first, before we do all of that, I think it's time to play a game, don't you?
Play the game, play the game, play the game.
All right, producer Sam, have you got a listener question for us?
I do.
Great.
This is from Katrina Casey. She sent us an email. She's been trying to find a perfect Queen ringtone. She's created some very interesting ideas, but it got her thinking of what Queen ringtone you guys might use or would like to use. Unfortunately, you can't use a good 8-minute Prophet song as a ringtone, as it must be no longer than 30 seconds. Ooh. So, this is the question. What 30 seconds of a Queen song would you use as your ringtone?
Oh, that's good.
I mean,
all the bells from Bicycle Race. The bicycle bell solo.
Oh my god, that's such a
I just play that and then
that would get so annoying.
Look around me and go, phone's ringing.
I thought you were going to go for Calling All Girls. It just was right there, but no.
Oh, that's good actually. Yeah. No, it needs that amazing video.
What about you, Simon?
I don't know. Not a song. Can I have Freddie's AOs from Live Aid?
Oh, my goodness.
Ah, that's good. A-O.
A-O. A-O.
just so that, you know, I'd have to sit there and listen to it, and then at the end, the cue to pick it up would be him going, "All right." Like, oh, I've got to answer the phone now. Before it goes to voicemail.
And people are like, "Can you just answer that phone?" You're like, "Hang on.
Hang on. Wait." Because I'd also want to see if anyone who was in earshot of my phone would join in. You know,
but if you could have two, you could have one set like that would be set for any of us ringing you. You know, you could have another set for people you don't really want ringing you, and then you do want them to go through to voicemail. You could use the Wembley 86 one where he ends by going. Go through to voicemail. That was a long journey to not very much, but anyway, I think
especially considering that is going to be AO in the edit.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. We AO all the.
Now you have to AO all that too.
That's what we do. That's what we do, new listeners. Dear old Freddie AOs over all of our swears so that you can listen to this in the car with your kids, except sometimes we miss them, so we apologise for that.
Kids love swearing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's the most fun thing ever.
It's their favourite thing.
I think for me, the thing you've got to think about with the ringtone is you're going to hear it a lot. And so the only thing I can think of that I'd want as my ringtone is 30 seconds of Dragon Attack. Thank you very much. I will never tire of it. Never, ever, ever tire. Of that amazing riff. Great listener question. Thank you very, very much. That was a brilliant one. Absolutely brilliant. Please send us your questions. We will do them on the pod. We'll do them. And you can just email...
We'll butcher them Queen... on the pod.
Well, we'll do them badly. But queenpod at thequeenpodcast.com is the best way to do it. Also, we would really love it if you sent them in as little voice recordings. You just record them on your phone as a video or... voice recording. It's so much cooler. It like really makes it you feel like this podcast has got tremendous production value, so we highly as well.
Hey, how's this for production values? I'm wearing leggings inspired by jazz album cover.
Oh wow. That is awesome. That's exceptional production.
It's an accident.
Which is the first ones you picked up today?
Yeah, I saw them and went, oh yeah, and then I went, that'll I do. Just saw them on the screen just then and went, oh yeah. You look like the album cover.
Yeah, I've gone for my Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, very good, very good.
That's what I've gone for today. Yeah, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. Should we get back to the works?
Yeah.
Heck yeah. Well, we're going to get on to this track now by Freddie Mercury called Jealousy, because on this album, Fat Bottom Girls and Bicycle Race are split up. By this song, Jealousy, by Freddie. It's quite an extraordinary little song. Should we listen to it a little bit first, Suze? Because I think you've probably got quite a lot to say about it. Let's listen to this lovely little bit. The thing that strikes me is sort of how much economy there is in what Brian's doing. Like, his guitar, it's not like he has full solos or anything. It's quite economical, but he does so much with it. He has these amazing little sitar bits and John's bass line is pushing through this track. I think on all of this album, actually, his bass lines are incredible. And my favourite little bit is that sort of how moment. So let's have a listen to all of that sort of stuff.
Jealousy, look at me now. Jealousy, you got me somehow. You gave me no. Suspicion on my trail. How oh my jealousy. I wasn't mad enough to let you hurt my pride. Now I'm only left with my own jealousy.
Come on, Suze, just have at it.
Have at it with Jealousy. Yeah. Okay. Well, this song has Brian. I don't think he's actually playing a sitar, but.
No, I could tell you what he's doing.
Ah, interesting. I wondered if he was manipulating one of his one of his guitars.
Well, again, I'm going to channel a bit of John Robbins here. So he's playing a Halfred acoustic guitar, which he used to, and then he produced the buzzing effect of a sitar by modifying the guitar's bridge with piano wire. And it's the same effect that he did on White Queen as it began on Queen 2.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what that means, but that is what he did.
No, but I this is going back to Mustafar, whether they would have gone, I don't know about this. I reckon someone like Brian would have gone, brilliant, what can I do to create a whole different sound within this song using just my collection of good old guitars. So with Jealousy, there's that element of it's a straightforward song about being jealous in a relationship which could have just been piano, and Brian has leveled it up by adding this really unusual sound. I like the way the song starts small. It spirals to a crescendo and then goes back to the angsty beginning of the song. Like the song is a circle, which is what jealousy in a relationship feels like. Smarter than your average song.
Wow. That's a proper legitimate observation you made
This song could have gone on Emotions by various artists.
It could have been one of the various artists. Yeah. No, that's very true. That's very true. I've got a very strange relationship with the song because when I was a kid, 17, 16, 15, whatever, obviously I was into the rockier stuff that they did at that age anyway, but I think this was one of the songs that I actively despised. Like, I almost resented it. I was angry with it. I think partly because the sitar was a sound that I associated with a music that my parents would force on me and I resented and found annoying anyway, you know what I mean? So where that might be exciting and a lovely little link through from, you know, it's an exotic sound that links through from Mustafar in a way, you know. But as a kid, it was the track that I just couldn't wait to skip almost. But
right.
And so you sort of, as an older person now, it's difficult to let go of that general sense of it, but I listened to it a few times on vinyl yesterday evening when I was doing my prep, and it's beautiful. It is beautiful. I really like the song. I can't help it. It is gorgeous, and I think these days those sort of, you know, those songs that Freddie writes, the sort of "It's a Hard Life," "Play the Game," you know, those kinds of songs that he's doing that are sort of rock ballads, are they? What are they? But they just have that sort of empathy with the audience that's so on point. And I think I prefer those songs in a way that I didn't enjoy them so much as a kid. Now that I'm older and I've experienced, you know, a longer life, and I understand what he's talking about, I think, more. I really connect to this song now. How about you, Simon? Where are you on Jealousy?
Yeah, I agree. I think it is a song that you perhaps you come to admire more and more as time goes by. It's surprising. Funny enough, it feels like a bit of an interloper, doesn't it? Because we're so used to hearing Fat Bottom Girls and Bicycle Race together that the fact that when you listen to this album, they are separated by something just jars somehow.
Does it?
Yeah, so what are you doing there? If you put something in between We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions,
yes, exactly.
when Friends Will Be Friends popped up in 86, it was like, oh, I like Friends Will Be Friends, and yeah, it works, but what are you doing there? You're not supposed to be there. But in isolation, when you listen to it, it is, as you say, a really beautiful song.
So obviously, I have to go through all the lyrics to see what kind of intro gags I'm going to do for you, right? I went through Jealousy going, it's Susie's favourite song I'm going to find. And the lyrics are just so moving.
Yeah.
And so on point. There's no jokes to be had there. There's none. It's a really beautiful song. It really is.
But it's also like over dramatic, like you get when if you're gripped with jealousy while in a relationship with someone, you do sometimes think, well, it doesn't matter if I live or die. You know, you get that. And then maybe 20 minutes later, you go, what a ridiculous way to feel just then. But at the time, it feels legit.
Yeah, man, jealousy. It's a tough emotion, that one. It's a tough emotion. He's nailed it. Beautiful stuff. Should we move on to Bicycle Race?
Bicycle.
Yes. Another Freddy special. It's great stuff. We did cover this on our Greatest Hits mini pod, episode 5 of that. Go check that out. I get into a big row with JR over it. Where I really like the song, and John is less enamored, shall we say. And Simon quite brilliantly brings us an extraordinarily dreadful Hollywood remix of the
track. Oh, yeah, that and was insane.
So bad. So bad. So go check out that. It's only 10, 15 minutes long, that episode. It's well worth a listen. If you haven't heard it, go back and have a listen to us chatting about Bicycle Race on Greatest Hits episode 5. But here we go. Song was released as double A-side with Fat Bottom Girls, as we know. I think you mentioned this earlier, Simon. Brian said about the writing of it, he said Fred got quite worked up about it. The Tour de France he's talking about. Fred got quite worked up about it, though we couldn't understand why, and then he came back with this delightful creation. So he's obviously... They were like, why is he so into the Tour de France?
I've got this amazing idea for a song. Yeah. I got it from seeing a load of bikes.
Yeah. It's not autobiographical. He didn't particularly enjoy bicycling, and he did like Star Wars. It's very important to say that, right? It's very important to say that. And we also talk in depth about the extraordinary music video on season 2, episode 3, where we rank the all of Queen's music videos. So we go into some depth there. And the controversy around it. So, what new things have we got to say about Bicycle Race that we haven't said before?
Well, it's going to be my ringtone.
Yes, exactly. You love that you sort of love-hate that little bell solo. You're sort of obsessed with it, right?
No, I don't hate it. I love it.
You love it?
There's no
good
hate.
I'm glad. Should I tell you why I'm glad?
Why?
Because
you're going to play it.
On the mini pod, I played it from the solo onwards, but now I'm going to play it up to and including the solo. What do you think?
Okay.
Shall we have a listen? And then we'll
yes.
Give us time to think about new things to say about this lovely song.
Bicycle races are coming your way.
So forget all your duties, oh yeah.
So nice. John's point was it was a bit of a novelty song and that maybe it didn't do Queen that many favours. But I disagree. I think musically it's brilliant. Go on, Suze. What do you think?
It's a complex song.
Yeah.
And most of it's in 4-4. And then when you get to that lovely lilting bridge they've got, bicycle races are coming your way, goes into 3-4.
Oh, really?
You just don't get many songs from rock bands, stadium rock bands, where they're like, well, we'll start in 4-4, then we'll go into 3-4, then we'll have a bicycle bell solo, then we'll go back into 4-4. It's quite an unusual, it's quite proggy, really.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't necessarily be put under the prog rock banner because it feels so novelty.
Yeah, I think that's a very cool. I did not even think about the time signature change. Of course it moves into, it got that swing in them. And it does evoke bicycles. It's brilliant. Go on, Simon, what do you think?
Well, the only thing I could add to this is when back in the day we were working on Greatest Video Hits 1.
Yeah.
We were sort of trying to find the best master version of each video that we could possibly find. So going back as far as we could to get the best quality one. And there were loads of tapes in the archive that said Fat Bottom Girls and Bicycle Race, because what would happen is they would make copies of the videos and send them out to all the TV stations and, right. and so forth, and in the hope that they get picked up. So 9 times out of 10, what those were was the Fat Bottom Girls video followed by the bicycle race video, which was the filming of the ladies in Wimbledon Stadium, heavily animated over with sharks
oh, yes, all
swimming
those effects.
In and,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, a policeman, I seem to remember, and London buses and things like that. So we kind of just did due diligence and went through them. And then one of the last tapes we checked was the original recording of the band on stage for Fat Bottom Girls. And then after it, they performed Bicycle Race on the same stage.
Oh, really?
That they'd record. So in the same setup, they recorded the Fat Bottom Girls video. They recorded, and that was going to be the original video before they had the idea to do the girls on the bikes. So
wow.
for Greatest Video Hits 1, we remade a video using some of the footage from the Nice Ladies
right.
and intercut it with the performance of them singing.
That was
it.
You.
Yeah.
Because that's the version I think of.
Yeah.
That's the version I know.
But the original video God. That came out that was used in back in the 70s was all just sort of animated, masked footage.
Oh. I see.
Because it was obviously a bit naughty.
It was very naughty.
A little naughty. Cheeky.
It was a little. There were lots of little cheeks.
Bit confessions of a window cleaner, wasn't it? Yeah. yes. Yeah, amazing. The one thing I would say about it is a song that somehow has entered the zeitgeist. Like, if there's any
yeah.
documentary or news item or anything that involves a bicycle, this is the song that gets used.
Yeah.
Like, what other famous songs about bicycles are there? Like, this is the one. Freddie's done it. He's covered bicycles. And bicycles are
yeah.
massive.
It's
many,
like, if anything about
a day.
If anything about cocaine is in a documentary, they play Stones' Gimme Shelter.
Sure.
If anything about a bike, it's bicycles.
Yeah, yeah absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you think Freddie saw
every
gap?
Olympics? Every Olympics to get like Sue Barcourt go, and now what? It's over to the velodrome. Let's see what action we got coming up. Bicycle race, bicycle race. They do just play.
They do. They do. It's out there, man. It's very, very present in everyone's lives, and it's and it brings a smile to the face. So what is wrong with Bicycle Race? I say nothing, but I tell you what, it is time for Suze. It's time for Simon Says. He's guaranteed to blow us mind. Oh, I'll try that again. I'll tell you what it is time for, Suze. He's guaranteed to blow our minds. It's time for Simon Says. Thank you. Guaranteed to blow your mind. What have you got to say, Simon? What have you got for us this time?
I'm afraid I've been a bit self-indulgent on
have
this
you?
One.
Have you?
Yeah, I've just
How
gone
dare
for
you?
Something that I want to play.
Hooray.
And we're going to be talking about this song in a couple of songs' time. Let Me Entertain You.
Yes.
But it's one of my favourite live songs that Queen do.
Ah.
So I just thought we had to have a bit of Let Me Entertain You live because
mm-hmm.
I there's something about it for me. It just feels so much meatier and heavier live than it does on the album.
And
so I thought,
which live version are you treating us to?
Do you know? I don't know.
Okay, fine. Let's listen to it then.
Okay, you want to get crazy? Come on, let's do it.
Such a banger.
It's great.
Should I just go straight to Let Me Entertain You and then do If You Can't Beat
Yeah,
Me?
Why not? Let's do it. Yeah,
yeah don't you think? Yeah. That's fun, yeah. So obviously, the next track on the album is If You Can't Beat Them by John Deacon, but let's come back to that in a sec. Let's do the final track on this side, which is Let Me Entertain You, a wonderful track by Freddie Mercury. I love it when Freddie writes hard rock tracks, and this is one of them. I love it. I love it when he writes like an Ogre Battle or a Princess of the Universe. This is one of them. And I think it's one of those songs like Stone Cold Crazy and Love of My Life that are semi-official big Queen songs, right? Like Lap of the Gods. Like if you want to pass yourself off as a Queen fan, like a deep cuts Queen fan, this is one of the tracks that you definitely need to know about, is Let Me Entertain You, right? A big part of their live set for years. Should we just have a little listen to the album version, and then we can get chatting about it? Absolutely love it. Where are you on this one, Suze?
Oh, Let Me Entertain You's great. It slaps way more than I remember as a teenager. Like, I don't think I was that fussed with it when I was 16. But I listened to it this morning and it felt so fresh. I do a lot of work on the LGBT cabaret circuit with like a lot of drag queens. And this song really ought to be an opening song for a rad drag queen, because it's such ultimate camp rock. I might have to nab it for myself, because who wouldn't want to burst onto the stage? You know, I wear an electric blue metallic leotard at the Royal Vauxhall Tavern. I think it'd be nice to go out there and say, what is it? Just take a look at the menu. We give you rock a la carte. That's really great. I want to go out there and
Cruella de Vil. That's a real track.
I like him. I also like, it says it's this song. Oh, it's grounds for divorce. It's also, it's really camp and fun. It's, and I really love the ending of this song as well, because Queen, they just never take themselves too seriously. And it's funny at the end. They're all just like, improvising some diva chat, saying, I'm not wearing that. It's fun. It's really fun.
Yeah, and I wonder if it is referring to that little strip joint they went to on the corner every evening.
Yeah, maybe.
It literally is. I've come here to sell you my body. I can show you some good merchandise.
Yeah.
I'll pull you and I'll pill you. I'll Cruella de Vil you. It's an incredible line. And to thrill you, I'll use any device.
He's talking about a microphone. The device is a microphone. Ooh, right, dirty bleeders. Okay. That's a really cool line, though. I'll pull you and I'll pill you. I'll Cruella de Vil you. And to thrill you, I'll use any device and merchandise and device rhyme. There's lots of internal rhymes.
So many rhymes going on.
That's clever. That's Sondheim level. That's like Ladies Who Lunch.
Right.
Sometimes Ladies Who Lunch does that with internal rhymes within the lines. And then there's a rhyme will come two lines later to something that was above it. And there's Freddie doing it 7 years after Company came out.
Wow. Well, yeah, I mean, he is such a witty lyricist. He's incredible. And this song is a fantastic example of that. One of the things I love about this song is it's full of references to the band themselves, you know.
Yeah.
Like, we'll sing to you in Japanese. That's a reference to Teo Toriati on another day at the races, right? And And they're talking about the band's tour manager, Jerry Stickles. Like, if you need a fix, if you want a high, Stickles will see to that. So if you want to get some drugs, talk to Jerry Stickles. You know, and it's like with Elektra and EMI, that's their labels. We'll show you where it's at, right? So there's all of those internal references. I think it's fantastic the way they do that. We'll come to the very ending bit in a moment. But one thing you touched on there, Suze, was... you know, you said, oh, what a great song to open a set with. And they used it at the top of their gigs quite a lot. It was generally the sort of second song they might play, or even the first song they might play around this neck of the woods. Is that right, Simon?
Yeah, and yet it closes
side A of jazz. It is essentially the last song on this side of the album, which is an interesting position for it. You know, it is a successful closing of this side of the album, but it has got that opener feel to it, right?
Yeah, there must have been conversations.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean,
but they never go down the obvious route, do they? So they went, no, we're going to open with E.
yeah, with a call to prayer. Yeah. Well, what a great track it is. It is. I just wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about the voices in the outro. I thought it. No one really knows what's being said, but Sam's done a little bit of research for us, so I'm going to run through it, and then we can have a listen to it and see what we think. So, according to lore, it is Freddie saying, "Hey, where's my backstage pass?" at the end. But I think it always sounded to me like it was Brian doing his little... Sometimes he does that little American voice thing that he does, and I always wondered if it was Brian. Then there's an unknown man that says, "Hey, that was a bit of all right, wasn't it?" Which I'd never really heard, and then... Great one, outrageous costume, which I always thought was Roger, but it is unknown.
I think it's Roger.
I think it's Roger, right?
It's Roger.
It's bound to be Roger. And then apparently Freddie says, "Hey, that Brian May is out of sight, man. I don't hear that." Someone, maybe Brian, says, not many, go straight. And some woman said...
Oh,
says,
I thought it was John Deacon saying, "Oh, not money.
Oh, really?
I thought it was... Okay. I
never really pulled that out. And then this unknown woman who will never know, I guess, if Simon doesn't know, we'll never know. I always wanted to be a groupie, is what she says.
Was it you?
Yeah.
I'm on a Queen album.
Little bottle of Evian and a towel.
I'm there holding it up, going, "I always wanted to be a groupie." And they're like, "Shut up."
Oh, okay. and then possibly Roger saying, "Give you lessons" or something right at the end. So that is the gibberish. Yeah, should we have a little listen, Sam?
Yeah.
And see if we're right. See what we can pick out. See if we change our minds about anything. If you dig the New York scene, we'll have a son of a bitch of a time. Come on, let me entertain, let me entertain, let me entertain you tonight. Hey, where's my backstage pass?
Great one, outrageous costume.
Great.
Is someone doing it? The woman's doing like an Eastern European.
Is he? Is
I've
he?
Always wanted to be a groupie. Someone. It sounds like someone putting it on.
That's so good. I'm sure that's Roger. That's got to be Roger. What outrageous costume.
What an outrageous costume.
Oh, fun game. What a fun game. Right. Guys, if you haven't listened to the jazz album, why wouldn't you at this point? Before we can leave the works, we must go back and listen to the penultimate track on this side of the album, which is If You Can't Beat Them by one Mr. John Deacon. A track that touches upon the themes of the worst sides of the entertainment industry, a lot like Freddie's songs did, actually. Let's have a listen to that, because it's kind of a banger. Keep your big ass off of my money. Don't try and pull me down. You're taking me out to wine and dine me. Trying to wind me round and round. And burn me to your legal contract. Rumor has it that you can play dirty. I'll tell you what I'll do about that. And that is, yeah. I'm playing them at their own game. Yeah. it's like one thing that's quite interesting about this one. So on a lot of the songs that John writes, he tends to play some of the guitars on them, right? But this is as well as the bass. But this, he just plays the bass, and Brian's doing all the guitars on it. It's quite a rare thing for John's song. It's sort of a poppy, peppy, rocky John Deacon number, right? Do you guys like it? Do you like it, Suze? What do you think?
Yeah,
of it?
I do. It's very recognisably John Deacon as well.
Right.
He always writes so well for Freddie's voice. Freddie will get that kind of almost girl group 60s pop sound. There's always an element of that in how John writes for Freddie's voice. This song reminds me a lot of George Harrison's song, What Is Life? Do you know that song?
I don't know if I do, actually.
What is my life without you? I mean, do you know it? It's on the Goodfellas soundtrack. That's the only reason I know. Okay. I think it came out just after he left the Beatles, so it sort of would have come out at the beginning of the 70s. It reminds me a lot of that. But there's always something slightly different when it's John writing for Freddie.
There's always something where you go,
there's something about this that I can't quite put my finger on, but it's its own thing.
Yeah, because Freddie just sells
very
it.
Technical.
He enjoys it, right? He said as much. He loves the way John writes for him.
They work very well as a pair.
They do. The reason I picked that little clip is because I just absolutely love Freddie's little yeah that he does it. Yeah. It's such an extraordinary crap.
It's everyone for themselves. She's just around the corner. It's 1978.
How things have changed.
Yeah, watch yourselves.
Yes, there is this extraordinary sort of... Freddie just is always enjoys singing John's song.
Yeah.
He just loves it. He's free with it. He's unencumbered, and he just goes for it. He loves it. I think maybe because he was very keen to encourage John as well. I don't know. Hmm. What do you think, Simon? You had it in your top 10 John Deacon songs, didn't you, way back when?
Yeah, but then when you think how many songs John wrote, pretty much all of them were in the top 10. But I like this side to Deakey, actually. Well, I think there was two tracks from the Flash album that weren't in the top 10, and that was it. Okay. But that was the thing about Deakey. He didn't do many, but all of them have something really, really interesting about them and are great. And I was just listening to that just now, and I was just thinking, why isn't this more well-known than it is, even amongst sort of Queen fans? I mean, it's not one that ever sort of rears its head anywhere, is it? Yeah. And it's a shame. I really like it, and I like that side of Deakey. And it feels, as we're saying, we're heading towards the game with this one, aren't we? It could easily have been on the game, this song.
Yeah.
It would have sat quite nicely there. So it's quite interesting that John was already there in that respect.
Yes, I think you're right.
Yeah, it's funny. I love that it's an upbeat track. I love that it's sort of a heavier track in lots of ways, but still got that pop feel and that appeal, that kind of just that pop sensibility. And you can say that about so many of John's lesser known songs. Why is You and I not better known than it is?
Yes,
yeah.
They sound like they should be really successful. I think ultimately, in the end, it's one of the songs that may be less present for Queen fans because there are other tracks on this album that are lesser known but are so potent. And because it's such an... You know, I know for a fact that there are tracks on this album that I don't like that other Queen fans... like, in this group, there are, but absolutely... Jealousy is a really good example, right? You're so passionate for Jealousy. And I'm so passionate for Dead on Time, which is coming off on the next album. Let Me Entertain You, right? And I wonder if You Can't Beat Them just somehow doesn't... Because it's just pop and it's fun and it comes up and you listen to it and it's like, yay, and then you've moved on. But actually, the lyrics behind it are pretty full on, right? He's being pretty cruel about the industry and stuff in it. It's an interesting...
Yeah.
Interesting
track. Disguised with this light, upbeat feel. You get that as well on Somebody to Love.
Yes.
Devastating lyrics, but it's like a raucous jam that you can sing at a wedding. Like, put it on the DJ and everyone going, oh, brilliant, it's Somebody to Love. And it's like, this song is devastating. It's like singing Someone Like You at a wedding.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, this is a song about the aching loneliness of man's existence. It's like, no, you've just got married. You found someone. Pick something cheerier. Something by Jess Glynn. Go on. Well, that means we have covered side A of jazz. What an epic return to Queen Podding we are having here. Yes?
Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
Nice to be back.
It's so lovely to be back. Please send us your comments. You can comment on any of our socials, Instagram, what's the other one? Twitter. Yep, at the Queen Pod. At the Queen Pod. We're not on TikTok. We never will be. But we're also on Facebook. You can find us there. Email us, queenpod@thequeenpodcast.com. It is worth doing. We are going to be returning next week with side B of jazz, which is very exciting. There's amazing tracks on there. Done on Time, In Only 7 Days, Dreamer's Ball, Fun It, Leaving Home Ain't Easy, Don't Stop Me Now. More of that jazz. Very exciting stuff. But the last thing that we must do in this episode is select our Queen de la Queen. Remember?
Made in heaven. Made in heaven. Yeah.
This is where we each select the track that we most want to go on the ultimate Queen playlist, Queen Pod playlist, which is on Spotify, right, producer Sam? It's out there somewhere.
Yep, correct.
If there is a tie, I get the casting vote. I will say that. And we don't include singles, right? So if it's already been a hit single, it's whatever isn't a single, because that you can just have greatest hits for that. So it's whichever track isn't already on greatest hits. So which of these tracks, Suze? I can't imagine. The suspense is killing me. Are you going to pick as your favourite on side A?
Well, initially I went, I'm picking Jealousy, but I know that on Queen de la Queen, we've already got My Melancholy Blues.
We do.
So I don't think you need Jealousy.
I agree.
I think you need Let Me Entertain You.
Interesting. Very interesting indeed.
I'm slapping it on there.
I like your thinking. I like your thinking. All right, then. And Mr. Simon Lupton, what have you got?
I'm trying to think of a really clever, smart, intelligent way that I've reached my decision, like Suze just has. But I can't. It's just Let Me Entertain You.
Is it?
Always was. Yeah, it's always going to be that. And
you just love it?
No, you know, well thought out journey to it. Just, it's Let Me Entertain You.
Would you like me to reveal some exciting information for you guys?
Go on.
Yes.
Last night, I texted John to ask him what was his favourite track. Yes, so that he has a vote.
Oh,
it was important that his voice was heard on the
Part
Queen de
the
la Cream. I don't want anyone questioning. What do you reckon his answer was?
If you can't beat him.
Okay. Do you agree, Simon?
I'm sensing that we could be on the cusp of a unanimous decision here.
Are you? Okay. Okay.
It's so possible. It's possible.
He went for jealousy.
Oh.
He went for jealousy. Instantly. It took him 30 seconds to reply.
I'm glad it's got represented.
It's got represented. It has got represented. And to further your hopes for unanimity, I would have gone for Let Me Entertain You had Suze also gone for Jealousy in order to get it to... Right? But because Suze is smart and has already figured all that stuff out, I don't need to. So it means that I can vote with my heart, which is for Mustafa.
It has
had a profound impact on me as a human being. I love that it exists and it's special. And I think it sits in that pantheon along with Let Me Entertain You with songs that should be in the Queen de la Queen. But what that does mean is the track that is making it into Queen de la Queen is, quite rightly, Let Me Entertain You! Yes. Oh, it's my favourite game. It's my favourite game.
We're going to Cruella de Vil you right here, right now.
Yeah, baby.
Have breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah, I know. That's so rock and roll, isn't it? We breakfast at Tiffany's. Do you think this?
It's the way it's like you knew what you were doing, didn't you, Freddie?
He did. He's wonderful. Yeah, in the middle of a really heavy track, he's talking about Tiffany's. Brilliant. A little bit of Hepburn. Why not? So, That has brought us to the end of this this wonderful episode. We will see you next time for Side B of Jazz. Please take the time, genuinely take the time, to pop onto the iTunes or Spotify or wherever you pick us up from, and just give us a little rating, give us a little review. It's so important. Please just spread the word. We need, you know, it's wonderful. We've got people listening all over the world. Just get on your Queen fan forums and shout about us if you're doing what we're doing. And what?
Get on your Queen fan forums and ride.
Yeah, that's what I should have said. Thank you, Suze. Suze, have you got anything that you want to shout about at the moment? Anything that you're working on that you want to plug while we're here?
I found this great band you should all check out called Queen. Put it in your ears, play it loud.
Play
I think
Queen
you'll be really
loud.
Into them.
Yeah, readers. Baby. Hashtag PQL. Well,
oh,
make sure,
yeah. I don't know. Will this be out before June 12th?
Yes. Yeah. Easily.
Okay, good. Yeah, because that's in like 4 months.
Yeah.
I am doing a show called A Night at the Sousa Calls at Brasserie Zidell's in Piccadilly. It's me, a full band, in this amazing Art Deco place that's got it's an Art Deco style entertainment venue that's got a restaurant attached to it. And when you eat on it, you feel like you're on the Titanic, but
oh
not
God.
In a gonna die way. Oh. It's the coolest venue in London, and I'm very lucky. That's on June 12th.
One night only. Are the tickets out? Do you
yeah,
know the
one night only. Night at the Sousa Calls, and there will be Queen.
Oh, mate. And are the tickets available already? Or are they...
Tickets are available.
And I
yes.
can't imagine. Do you know how many seats there are?
There, I think it's a 70-seat venue.
Oh, my gosh. They're going to be snapped up
so it's
by
exclusive.
The time we finish.
I know a third
talk.
Of them have gone already.
Whoa.
So
Suze.
Got to go. Get in there fast.
Oh, that sounds really exciting. Fantastic stuff. And how about you, Simon? Is there anything... What's happening with Greatest Hits? You're wrapping up fairly soon, aren't you? We just had
Queen the Greatest.
Brian on the roof.
Yeah, Queen the Greatest is finishing. But we are thinking about what we might do next. So I'm hoping
dun, dun, dun.
There'll be more sort of, you know,
we
weekly,
have big plans this year, don't we?
Weekly. There's a lot going on. We, you yeah. know, the tour's coming up. So
yeah.
Yes.
Who knows what we'll be doing around
the
there.
The O2 had its roof ripped off,
absolutely.
Got peeled like a damn orange.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
that
maybe it'll
be
Queen in the open air.
By May.
Oh.
It
would
yeah.
be good to
no,
have them
I,
back in
I,
the open air, wouldn't it?
Can't wait to see them back out on the road again. It's
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Hey,
I've
do you think this
over.
Might be Simon? Do you think you'll be able to fix it for me to not like that to sing to sing with Brian this year?
To sing with Brian?
Yeah, me and Brian.
Yeah, why
come
not?
On. That's what I think.
I think.
Let's fix this.
So EastEnders and singing with Brian.
If Brian
2022.
Wants to come, if Brian, yeah, Anita needs to get me on EastEnders.
Yeah.
If Brian wants to come to my show on June the 12th, tell him I can get him a free ticket.
Ooh.
I've got a horrible feeling he might be performing at the O2 on the same
I
night.
Probably am meant to be seeing him at the O2 that night and no longer can.
But if he's not, I reckon he'll be there like a shot.
Yay, yeah. I knew it. And I'll go, come on then, Brian. Come on stage. Anything you'd like to plug, mate? I can do that.
He'll be saying, yeah, we've still got a few tickets left at the O2 if anyone's interested.
I'll go, come up here. It's good exposure.
Which song do you want to sing with him?
With Brian?
Yeah.
The bicycle bell solo from Bicycle Race.
That's great, because we've literally just been talking about that album. That's so on point.
Oh my God.
I thought you were
going to
say like 39
or
something, but no.
Yeah,
I
want to
do
39.
I want to do the bells.
I know, I want to do 39. That's
do
what I meant all
do
along. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's
yeah.
A great
and the audience will go like, whoa, can't believe it. And
God,
I'll go,
it's
yeah.
better than George Michael. That's what they'll do. It's going to be amazing. Absolutely amazing. Fantastic stuff. Well, wonderful. I've had so much fun. It's so nice to be back together.
Yeah.
I always find a little wisdom in these songs, so I'll leave you this. Keep your chin up when you're feeling lonely. Don't let them get you down. Like Freddie says, give as good as you get. Thank you, Suze. Thank you, Simon. And thank you, producer Sam. We'll see you all very soon. Goodbye.
Bye.
This has been The Queen Pod, a Seven Seas Films production, edited and produced by me, Sam Easton. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, and stay in touch by emailing queenpod@thequeenpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.